Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is Post covering finance and property news. Another Monday evening, another Edwin. Hi, Edwin, how are you going?
Martin Martini, I'm doing well. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. A lot going on. You'll be pleased to know I've made my hole in the wall.
You did. So tell me, how'd you manage that? With a sledgehammer, or did you end up getting a concrete cutting company to come around and cut a hole through your wall?
I actually did it using one of these new, is it SDR drills? So it's one that actually has a chisel as well as holes. So I ended up drilling a whole series of masonry holes around the edge, right? And then actually joined the dots and then knocked it out. So it was a DIY.
Oh God! Did you get council approval? That's my question, Martin.
Well, I don't think it's structurally. I don't think it's structurally weakened the property, and I obviously took all the precautions with face mask and eye protection and the goggles, the whole lot. So gloves. It wasn't too dusty. So, I mean, a bit of dust, but it wasn't too bad. So anyway, the hole is now made, so I can now connect the rest of the studio up.
Oh, that's great. I was just about to say that. Tell me you had some sort of vacuum system at the at the end of that drill, so you could vacuum all the concrete dust, because concrete dust, reinforced concrete dust, does not go well with your with your electronic equipment, let me tell you that much.
No. We covered everything up and cleared it all up. So yeah, it was a bit of an exercise, but we got there. So because it was the one thing that was holding me up, right, in terms of being able to get the rest of the studio connected. So hopefully next week we'll be able to do the sort of the two views and all the other stuff. So fingers crossed. Anyway, success for me, but I'm not sure so much success for a few other people at the moment as I'm watching what's going on.
Well, it looks like, sounds to me like you maybe your services are in high demand, especially with Top Place. I mean, there's 90 owners corporations that may do with your services, Martin. So it sounds like you know what you're doing, but Top Place, or Tip Top, as I used to call them, Tip Top Constructions aren't doing very well. And what out of the 30 apartment blocks that were under audit, four of them are going to be potentially be issued with vacation notices, vacate notices. And my understanding is that from the video watching the report on the AFR that you did on, I think it was Tuesday you posted it, the one in four apartment complexes have got major defects. One in four apartment complexes have been built since 2008. Or so forth, where I've got major defects within the complex.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about this for some time, Edwin, haven't we? And highlighting the deficiencies in terms of the certification process and the checking process. I mean, pretty much all states have outsourced the certification process to private certifiers, who of course have vested interests in not finding things, and because of the rushed construction process and because of the pressure on costs as well, many construction projects have actually cut corners, and unfortunately the cutting the corners creates a whole bunch of problems. But they got to the point now where you can't even get an occupation certificate for some of the new stuff. But more worryingly, some people have already bought those and have moved in, and now down the track they are essentially being asked to leave because they are not up to scratch. It is a disaster. It's a major disaster. I wouldn't buy anything in a high-rise development that's been built in the last 15, 20 years.
I don't think anybody that's got any brains would move forward with the purchase of a newish apartment built post-2008 without a building report of some sort, an independent report and a report that would be sanctioned or would be bought or ordered by the purchaser. So these are the things that we are seeing. They're playing out. We've been talking about it. I've been talking about and posting about the million-dollar ghettos since 2008, 2009, making videos about apartment blocks right next door to the Mascot Towers. I mean, Dusty still of the opinion that Mascot Towers and also along with Opal Towers, we will see them being demolished, and there will be others that will be demolished, and we will see them with our own eyes. I've already got first row seats with a few others from Twitter to watch them all being to come down. But look, all jokes aside, these are the issues that people have been warned about. People, some have listened, a lot haven't. The unfortunate thing is, Martin, is that the spruikers find their victims predominantly in the overseas market. And as you said, by them in your video, and we referred to in the past also buying off the plan with no real due diligence on the builder and the history of the builder, let alone the complexes they may or may not have been built previously. So they don't know how to test the builder. They haven't got a history, or if they do, they don't go and research what they built in order to find out whether or not what they're currently building is going to be have the same issues. I've also always said to people that have been looking at buying new and off the plan apartments, look, the first thing you should be doing is finding out who the builder is, and going knocking on doors of previous developments and complexes that they built. And as you so-called you brought out in your video, as to the reports, a lot of the times you don't find out about the issues in the complex within the first year or two. They usually come in within 4 or 5 years after you've they've been occupied.
Yeah, and for me, Edwin, one of the other worrying things is, of course, people then say, "Oh, well, the state or local authority should buy us out, or in some way solve the problem." Now, let's remind everybody that the problem was created by changes to state and local authority regulations in the first place. So there is a line of argument that says, "Well, they do have some responsibility," but I have to say, caveat emptor, buyer beware. People should actually be thinking about this stuff when they buy, rather than assuming that somehow they're going to be bailed out by the state or by the local authority later. I mean, that's taxpayer money again, isn't it? I have a real issue with this, but it is interesting how more and more people are grizzling and looking for another bailout.
Look, and I will, and it's we haven't heard the end of it, Martin, because we've also been talking about for almost 3 years and beyond about the shoddy construction of freestanding developments such as your freestanding homes or your small strata complexes that contain townhouses or villas. So, or your duplexes. I mean, the ponds come to mind. Jordan Springs comes to mind, and a lot of the properties around Marsden Park, and that they all come to mind. Schofields. I mean, a lot of these areas, as I've said for many years, you only have to look at the historical use of the land for these where these new properties are being built. I mean, some people have reached out to me and talked to me about buying in places, like Oran Park and the like, and we're talking high ticketed homes with second dwellings on them for a second, to get a second income, and where when you do a little bit of background research, you find out that the at the end of the street where it's closer to a small lake, which is, by the way, promoted on the advertising as a water views and all that sort of shit. It's but yet historically you find out that there were marshes and there were they are the swamp lands in historically, and the overflow areas for the rivers. So, and then they start complaining, and the developers get away with a lot of these developments because all they have to do is raise the, in some cases, like we know in Marsden Park, where they had to raise the level of the land by only 100 millimetres. There are a lot of lowland areas. And the waterways, the natural waterways that have been revamped into stormwater drains and everything, they're not coping, and they won't cope with a lot of the diversions, let alone with a lot of the man-made rains. Put that in brackets. And look, and the nature of this, what we're seeing over the years, what we have been seeing, these torrential downpours that come down all at once. Are just going to, they block the drains, and then you get all these low-lying areas underwater. So, look, it's been farcical from day dot, from when they first the private certification came into being. They had a review of it, and on the review of after running private certification for a number of years, on the review. Government review of the private certification, it was deemed that it wasn't working. But guess what the powers to be decided? They decided to try it again because it could get better, and things are only going to get worse. We're only going to get more issues, Martin. That's the unfortunate thing. We're going to have more issues. There's going to be a lot more pain, and there's going to be a lot more need of well-built property in the future.
Well, exactly right. And it's a ticking time bomb, isn't it, unfortunately, because as we both have said, the problems don't emerge on day one. And, it can be months or even years before the underlying issues really are emerged. And that means, of course, that many people could be sitting on something which is worth a lot less than they thought it was. So that's the other point just worth thinking about, right? The value destruction, or the potential value destruction that there is in those areas, is significant, because a lot of these properties were sold at top dollar, and if in fact there's a lot of defects and a lot of issues, and maybe even the risk of being kicked out of the property, then it's worth, well, a lot less or close to zero.
Look, it's in there's a lot of other background information that a lot of people don't know. I mean, our followers do, the ones that have follow us regularly, because I brought it up in the past, and that is the exorbitant commissions that are paid to the spruikers. These are the accountants, mortgage brokers, financial planners that moonlight as real estate agents and sell off the plan apartments to the client base, because they know the financial position, and a lot of the plan opportunities are sold to superannuation funds as well. They get turned into SPVs, and then they the super funds get turned into SPVs, and then they purchase the property through that. Now the commissions that are paid out by the developers to coerce the financial industry into selling these properties, as I spoke out in the report four or five years ago, there was a report on the ABC where I was saying commissions are paid to some of these people anywhere between 5 to 8%. Now, to a lot of people, people may say 5 to 8%, as I always say, percentages don't really mean don't really say much. Until you start looking at the numbers, right? So if you've got let's round it off, $1 million apartment, and the spruiker is getting 8%, I mean, that's an $80,000 commission, right? Now, the typical agency, the average agency commission at the moment is running at 1.5% for a sale of a property. This is in Sydney. So it used to be a 1.7, and not too long ago it was a 2%. But at the moment, the average commissions is a 1.5. So do your math. The average commission payable to a licensed real estate agent that operates an office in the suburb is 1.5. 1.5 of a million is $15,000. 8% to a spruiker is $80,000. So hence the reason why there's a lot of shenanigans that go on in the financial sector to peddle these badly built developments. And this is why they got themselves in a lot of hot water and a lot of strife. I mean, there are a lot of companies, spruiking companies, that then turn themselves into real estate agencies, and these people wouldn't know a thing. But to safeguard our viewers and to safeguard friends and relatives of our viewers that pass on the information, is what they need to do is they need to, and as I've said all along to people that have been caught up in these scams, is make sure that everything that the agent tells you, all the documentation that they provide to you, is kept written down, logged in a diary, so that if you do have an issue, you can come back to it. But also, there's another body that needs to be also taken to task, and a lot harder, and that is the strata management companies, because they've got a lot to answer for, and the legal eagles haven't really chased it down that path, because it represents, there's too much, there are too many dangerous liaisons between developers, the legal eagles, and the strata managers, Martin. And unfortunately, until those relationships are broken and severed, nothing's going to change. The strata companies have got a duty of care to present certain reports in a timely manner. Otherwise, developers and builders can walk away from major rectification works. And I believe that is my strong belief as to what happened in Mascot Towers. But if you look at the strata reports from Mascot Towers, you see that the original strata manager that took charge of the owner's corporation, or that complex to manage, in my opinion, was not acting in the best interest of the owner's corporation, but rather was acting in the best interest of the developer slash builder, and let him get away with murder. And we are where we are. So these are the things that the current government has to address, among other things that we're going to talk about today, obviously, within the real estate industry. And that is those relationships between the industry bodies that are meant to be put in place to protect both the consumers as well as tenants, because tenants are the ones that are the meat in the sandwich in a lot of the cases, because they're the ones that get ousted. And because a lot of these apartments in these high-rise developments are investor-owned. So there's a lot going on, and there are a lot of moving parts. And I hope and pray that the current government do bring all these things into order.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of moving parts below the waterline, all of the various backhanders. And so what you think goes on isn't always what goes on, unfortunately. Now, let's talk about Mexican standoffs, because we are beginning to see a very interesting trend at the moment, right?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. So today, Dusty and I did the rounds, and obviously trying to look at new property that's potentially coming on the market that we're interested in. And this is what I just put up on Twitter in relation to the Mexican standoff. So this is a time with low listing numbers. Obviously, this coincides with the previous discussions, and it's an add-on to a previous discussion that we had, where agents will do whatever it takes in order to take on a listing, right? So I've raised some examples of listings. So one is in Sylvania, and where the agent wants to list the property for sale because it represents as a 2% commission, represents $60,000-$70,000 plus marketing fees to the agent, if the sale goes ahead, perhaps a bit, or a little bit more. Now, but the thing is, the owner says, "Yeah, okay, you want to sell my property? I'll put it on the market." And these are properties that are rented out, by the way. So they're not necessarily owner-occupied, the majority of them. And the owner says, "Yeah, okay, but I want 3.5." This is a property, a house in Sylvania, rundown house in Sylvania, and it's our opinion that the property is really only worth 2.7. And that would be at the top end of our scale. So there's a big difference, right? And this is what I call the Mexican standoff, because as an agent, a genuine agent, a prudent agent, would walk away from that because you're really in a way buying the listing in order just to have something on your books to put it on. But you're going to be wasting a lot of time, and it also creates false expectations in the vendor's mind, because you, as the so-called professional, as a selling agent, take that on and go to market, and you're sort of falsely keeping a higher value for certain areas. Another one in Summer Hill. Again, it's a small two bedroom home that is being somewhat revamped to accommodate a few more bedrooms. And yeah, the agent says, "I want to sell your home," and the vendor says, "Yeah, sure, I want 3.7." But in our opinion, in our estimates, in our office, we put the top value of that at 2.3. Okay, let's give it another couple of hundred thousand, 2.5. But again, it's a vast difference. But the agent has taken it on in that area because they've got no listings again, and I want something to try and sell. Their thoughts and their opinions are that across the board, the consensus is that, look, I'm taking the listing on. I know what the vendor thinks. They're living in dreamland, but I'm taking the listing on because then within the first week or 2 weeks, I will educate them or condition them to accept a lower price. But look, I'm of the opinion that you may get 30% may go that way, but the other 70% won't, because they'll be stubborn, and in a lot of the cases they don't really need to sell. I mean, I know that for most of these properties they don't really need to sell. Only one wants to sell. There's another one in Hoxton Park that the vendor wants 1.5. Our opinion is 1.2 to 1.25 at the maximum end of the scale. So there's your Mexican standoff. But what we're finding is that out of the good, the bad, and the ugly, the ugly are taking it on. They're taking on that risk, and in my opinion, they're the ones that are going to get shot first. But then again, Martin, desperate agents will do desperate things in desperate times, because no money, no honey.
It's such a simple proposition, isn't it? If agents don't have any properties to list, they can't sell them. So they'll do almost anything to get something to sell, even if that means overvaluing it, even if it means expecting effectively a price which is way above what it should be. And then, of course, that leads to the underquoting, overquoting issue, and all of that stuff. So I think that with the recent change, though, in the listings trajectory, I don't know whether you've seen this, but we've certainly, CoreLogic started to say, hang on a moment, there's something happening with winter listings. It looks like they're going up a bit. So it may be that things are actually on the move. But in the meantime, as we've said before, agents are desperate. The reason they're desperate, of course, is because they've got to keep the wolf from the door.
Yeah, that's right. But look, I took one of those tweets to task somewhat, because people started getting all frothy at the mouth, believing that there were a lot more listings. Our mate Tom Panos being one of them. But then again, yeah, you gotta see who's driving that, right? And who's driving that narrative at the moment. It's people in the industry. I mean, Tom's a good bloke. He makes his most of his money out of subscriptions to selling agents to take on his philosophy of being the greatest real estate agent in Australia. So kudos to him. But so he's obviously got to drive that narrative, right? And he's got to put that out so other people can panic. Look, I'm not saying the CoreLogic numbers are totally wrong, and I'm not saying that they're totally bad. We just look at the Sydney market. That may be true in a lot of areas that we've also noticed just off the cuff. We check on other areas in regional areas. But I don't believe that that's the case, that we're seeing the listing numbers rise for in the way or in the manner that they're stoking it in the main cities. And again, CoreLogic's reports, of my understanding is it's across the board. So we are seeing in a lot of regional areas, there's a dump of property because there are no tenants and there are occupants because there is no work. And the reason why there's no jobs is because industry is pretty much shutting down, retail shutting down, the hospitality industry shutting down, and the banking sector is moving out and moving closer to the central hubs. So you're going to have that. We always go back, as we do in our show, is my numbers, the majority of my commentary is based along the Sydney region and in a small extension of it. I can't talk too much about Melbourne other than superficially or Brisbane, apart from what Catherine Cashmore or others post on different social or media platforms. I'm not seeing the change that would be of significance in Sydney, and again I go on record and say that until we double the amount of listings on market here in Sydney, the demand on the ground is way too high, and the WeChat chatterers are preparing for the second wave of buying. They've been very instrumental in letting us know months in advance as to what the movement and the trends are going to be within their groups and their community, and the mainstream media are only just reporting on it when you and I were talking about it last quarter of 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the WeChat chatterers are, I think, a very important leading indicator, and they are indeed saying Australia looks nice.
Yes, they are, Martin. It's looking very nice. The local chatter there at the moment is, which I've also shared on Twitter, is the apparently there's some sort of this is local to Sydney, of course. There's something happening in Lidcombe. I haven't really done too much research on it of late or recently. But apparently there's rumours, or the council may have already approved a waste transfer station near the cemetery in Lidcombe. So now the WeChat chatterers are obviously. There's a lot of chatter around that, and they're basically telling all their, all the chatterers on the different groups, if you've got property in Lidcombe, sell, because the values are going to go down because the whole place is just going to smell to high heaven. So it's an interesting chatter and interesting topics that they bring about. The other one, obviously, is with the mainland chatter, and which is rather interesting. And to both yourself and us, and to try and get an idea and an indication of what's to come. Oh, they've got 13 million uni graduates, are going to hit the jobs market in August. So there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of chatter around that. There's a lot of people are wondering what are they going to do. Don't forget, last year there was something like 10 million to 11 million. That are still unemployed, and now we've got another 13 million that are gonna hit the ground, and there's no prospect of work. So that philosophy that we learned about months ago with respect to the Ranzhou, at any opportunity you get run away from China, and of course Australia is in the top two. Destinations for anybody that can get out of China, and that can, is willing and wants to, and has the right connections. And if you've got all of the above, well, you've also got a lot of money. And hence the reason why the local WeChat chatterers are preparing for a second wave of buying into this into what they're saying. And this is the interesting part. The mainstream media or a lot of chatter on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and all those other English social media platforms, they're all talking about the pain thresholds, mortgage stress, and interest rate rises and everything. So the chatterers are saying, well, we'll just sit back, we'll just prepare our finances, and when they start dumping them. Without realizing what's to come around the corner, because we because they believe, and so do I to an extent, that we really haven't felt the impact of the, you know, of the current migration policies of the current government. So there's going to be a swelling. There may be a bit of a pullback, but they believe that in that pullback of prices, that's when they're going to jump back in and buy those properties that are that are being dumped by the local investors. But you and I know what they do with them, Martin, and that's a different, you know, a different investment strategy than your traditional Australian property investor.
Yeah, as we've discussed, if you can cram in a few more people into the property and generate more rental income, then that changes the economics. But interestingly, the other conversation point there was that a lot of those uni graduates from China, I think they're going to be TikTok influencers. That's the way to make money.
Well, that's it, man. This is it. This is, you've got a poll that was cast there, and you've got, out of the 13 million graduates, 67%. I don't know what size the poll was, but 67% believe that they will be TikTok influencers, and that's the career path that they're gonna choose. The government have got another novel idea, Martin, and I like the government's idea, and that is, if basically what they're encouraging families to do is if you've got a young graduate staying at home, you know, you've got one of your kids staying at home without a job, their philosophy is that you should really be paying that that child, that family member, to a wage of 2,000 yuan a month. I mean, this is, and they've labelled that it's a new industry, Martin. It's a new industry. They've labelled that as you being a full-time family member. Now, that's not to be confused as being a full-time family carer. Yeah, you know, this is a full-time family member is a new job description or position in China, obviously, to keep the unemployment numbers down, right? And they're encouraging the families to pay youngsters to pay them 2,000 yuan a month. Now, on top of that, they're also encouraging them to pay what we would call the superannuation or social insurance premiums. On top of that, now added to that. And this is added to that. Typically, Chinese families have got the grandparents also living at home, right? And your newly graduated child, and they're going to be the full-time family member. They should also be paying them 1,000 yuan a month, right? And this is the kicker. This is the job description: a support person paid by their parents to help at home and provide assistance with cooking and other chores, as well as emotional support. So, and the government's considering that as a job description, and they're basically encouraging the parents to pay that money, or obviously, or to keep the unemployment numbers down, because they're in a world of caca, right? With regards to their economy.
Well, that's very interesting, because of course that means that those people are now off the unemployment list, so they can claim that. The latest GDP number, by the way, that came out from China was relatively weak, below expectations, and of course the inflation in China is close to zero at the moment, so the Chinese economy is certainly languishing. And interestingly, they're now talking about potentially more government stimulus for the economy to try and actually pull it through. Prices for property in China are still going sideways or down, and so they've got a certain big challenge. But all those young people, if they can take them off the unemployment number by making them full-time family members and getting somebody else to pay them, hey, Albo, here's a new idea.
Well, that's right. So that's, I guess that's, then there's no discrimination, right?
Absolutely.
I had to go and collect Coca-Cola bottles and Fanta bottles to make extra pocket money. I used to get 20 cents when I used to go to Glasgow Primary School. That was only on a Friday. That was we looked forward to Fridays, because that was when I got 20 cents to make a lunch order. I mean, that's the sort of stuff. I mean, I worked at the age of 14 and 9 months you had to be before you could work at McDonald's. And I got my first job at Port, or other than doing casual paper run around Glazeville in those areas there. At 14 and 9 months, I got a job at Glazeville McDonald's, which was the first McDonald's with a drive-through. I mean, that's the sort of shit we did to get recognized. That's to get some money. Then, but yeah, look, I wish sometimes, yeah, when you look at this sort of stuff, we should have brought in full-time family member in Australia. When Whitlam was around, I don't know.
Oh well, the next thing will be universal basic income. Just watch this space. Now, let's go on and talk about this showroom specials discussion, right? We set up a hornet's nest last week, right, when you actually gave those three price levels. And a lot of people said, oh, well, as long as it looks okay, surely it's up to the vendors to sort of kick the tires and make sure it is. But as we said, well, you don't necessarily know. But you've got another example of the showroom specials to do with painting.
Yeah, look, and going on that same thread, right? Because it's you just you, I'm just learning more and more each week on with regards to a lot of these Chinese masters and the price points. So now you've got the obviously there's the price point to live, to rent, or for sale, and this is around painting. I forgot to send you the photos. I'll post them up on Twitter. And that is the now if you get a quote from a Chinese painting master to they'll ask you the questions, is it to live in or is it to rent, is it for sale, right? So the to live in, the price points average between 12,000 to 15,000, because obviously that requires a lot of preparation and there's a lot of more care taken and putting down drop sheets and gapping and all this sort of stuff that painters do. Then there's the to rent. It could be just a bit upwards of 7,000. This is an average. This is a relatively sizable decent 4-bedroom home. Right, these price points, and this is to paint ceilings, walls, and timber frames, timber doors. All the skirting boards, anything of timber around the house, right? So if it's to rent, could be cheaper, but it was averaging around 7,000, but you could get it a bit cheaper. And to sell, here it is, Martin. Drum roll! It's $3,000 to $4,000 for a 4-bedroom. Obviously, that this is the showroom renovation special. Obviously, this does not include gapping. Does not include, from what we've seen, in some of the inspections that we went to in to yeah up to the North Shore, tint the in some cases apart from watering down the paint, they tint the ceiling paint with a color so that they only really need to give it one coat, a top coat on the walls, and they get away with with the cheaper paint. So it's in and out type of a job, but you can. If you look hard enough in the open for inspections, you can see, what changes have been done with the showroom renovation specials for sale.
Absolutely right. And again, caveat emptor, buyer beware. When it might look as though it's just been redecorated, but ask yourself the question, what's the quality job? Is it high quality, low quality, or no quality? Because of course, quite often what you discover is that it's a very thin layer of poor quality paint that deteriorates quickly, and then you're back to square one. And by the way, if you do have poor quality paint put on, if you then want to subsequently fix it up, it's much more complicated, right? Because you've got to deal with the poor quality. You can't just sort of go over the top. So quite often it means that there's more work later to actually bring it back to to a better standard. Incidentally, just on the side, I've just had my place redecorated, right? And the whole process was excellent, and the guy was definitely doing a job for me to live in. But what we did discover was one area in the property where previously there'd been a piece of damage to the plasterboard, right? And what they'd done, they'd stuffed in a plastic bag and then put polyfiller over the top. and then painted it, right? And so the painter sort of was saying, quite sort of, you know, sort of gave a little poke, and the whole thing just fell away, right? And the plastic bag dropped out. So, and that, by the way, in a relatively high quality property. So, you know, we had to fix that up. Just warning, be warned, caveat emptor.
Yeah, look, there's all sorts of things. There's one that we've had to redo that for a client that we're helping him renovate, and that is we knew that they just painted right over the wallpaper. Oh, it's a bitch to get off. paint on wallpaper, to remove the wallpaper that's had two coats of paint on top of it. It is really laborious and time consuming to take short. Helping him do this job, next time around, I'm just gonna tell the boys just to literally pull the gyprock down and just re gyprock it. It would be a lot cheaper, a lot easier when you think about it, because when you add. When you add the time, renting the machinery, doing this, it's seriously, mate. Sometimes you're just better off gutting the place and starting from frames.
Yeah, cutting your losses and going back. And just by the way, on my renovations and wallpaper, we actually had an amazingly bad wallpaper on one of the walls in the bedroom. Right, it was a sort of a bright blue color. And the painter said, "Oh, it's going to be hard to get it off." And I said, "Well, we'll give it a go." And literally, he pulled the first corner off, and the whole lot just came off. It was so poorly glued on. It was hilarious. He said, "I've never seen wallpaper come off so easily." So he sort of, looked at it and then cleaned the glue off and went on. But it just shows, you can be lucky, but you don't always be lucky with wallpaper, particularly if it's painted over. And as you say, quite often the amount of effort required to get wallpaper off is pretty severe, and that's why people paint over it. But that just makes the problem even worse. So again, it's worth kicking the tires before you make an offer on a property and think through. By the way, I'd actually deducted a certain amount to redecorate the property from the price I paid, so I was perfectly happy. I'm actually within my budget still.
Oh, that's what you got to do, and this is what we were saying. You got to take all these things into consideration when you're making your offers and your design. Because look, once, and you try and do a lot of these things before you move in as well, because if you try moving in and doing a lot of this it's taking a hell of a lot longer now due to the demand of tradespeople and the costs. Let alone with with everything else that goes with it, both parties being at work, access, everything else. So you're better off trying to do a lot of this work before you move in, because once you're in, it's renovate, a number of parts of the dwelling, whether it be an apartment. It's very frustrating, and it can be very, 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 very challenging. So, but look, you just, like as you said, Martin, so rightly said, you take all those things into account, and you make your offers because having to stop start work ends up costing you a hell of a lot more, and not taking into account all these things that we've raised along the way, subfloor issues, ventilation issues, mold issues, you name it. We probably raised it in the past. If you don't take all that into the costs to have those things rectify into your, when you're making your offer, you're only going to be paying, if you think it's going to cost 100, it could end up costing 150 to 200. Double your budget on the other end if you've moved in.
Absolutely. Well, I did a lot of the work before my furniture arrived, which made the whole process a lot easier. And that's one advantage of shipping stuff from the other side of the world. You have a couple of months to get sorted out, even if you have to live in a sleeping bag on the floor in the meantime. Now let's talk about some of the articles, because it's interesting that we've got some spruikers talking about the way that the Chinese investment is going to support property prices.
Yeah, look, there is that thought, but again, you've got to be careful when you're reading these articles, obviously, and you've got to determine whether or not your area that you're looking into is influenced by the overseas Chinese investors. Let's not forget that there are a lot of people that are living overseas that do have and hold PR. That means so they can come back to Australia anytime and basically buy a secondary dwelling. And there are a lot of people there. So, but once again, these articles are really just a reminder that you and I, we were talking about what the WeChat chatterers were saying in last quarter of 2022, as they were preparing, because obviously they're in they're very much in touch with what's also with a lot of other chatterers and a lot of other groups in China. It's a very powerful platform where you can, the conversations are very diverse from all parts of the world. But the threat was, and we spoke about how they were preparing, and a lot of the local Aussie property buyers and investors sort of were missing the point. And it's only now that the mainstream are talking about stuff that we were already telling our followers was going to happen. And a lot of it has to do with that, with again that philosophy, that run Zhuo philosophy, and this run away from China. Because of everything and all the chaos that is happening there, and the greater unemployment numbers that are being reported, the economy is really bad. Industry shutting down, not being able to kickstart. You've got India, Vietnam, pretty much taking over a lot of the industry that was otherwise would have been directed to demand that would have been directed over to China. But for what they're saying is, but for the new philosophy and the path that Xi Jinping's been taking the country through, even pre 2020, there was already a movement, a strong movement to China was decoupling from the Western world. Even back then, you and I spoke about around the financial. The financial sector, that it was more or less slowing down foreign investment into China. So there was already that, but and the pandemic brought a lot of that, the ramifications of that, to a halt. But now they're feeling it now, and this is why there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of trouble, a lot of unrest, and people are just bailing. So and this is and obviously the. We feel it here in Australia because our markets are very, very small, and in areas, affluent areas of Sydney and Melbourne, where there's a great appetite for the community to gravitate towards and look at these places. But then we already reported on some of that previously, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, if you recall, how people were buying homes that in pretty much. What they considered, in their opinion, was they were just paying for the land, exorbitant prices, albeit, but 3 days off the plane, and they were dropping $4.3 million for homes in the North Shore, and and pretty much flattening, getting prepared to flatten them then and rebuild, and that is the sale. But this is the kind of money, and this is the kind of influence that's coming over. But again, we say it's. The charterers are telling us that there is a second wave of this coming on to a lot of these areas where these communities gravitate towards. The local charterers, and I want to make it very clear, is the local charterers are looking further afield outside of these areas because they're more into the investment. They're more investors. The ones that are coming over with the big bucks are owner-occupiers. So, to me, it's just, we've been there, we spoke about it, Our charters have already told it. We've already told our followers that, and we've put it in the table ages ago. And this is where, in the next article with the financial review, it's really again an indication of what people are doing to rental properties. And it's, although it's a lot of it's to do with Airbnb, or room letting through Airbnb, short-term letting is still a money-making machine that a lot of investors preference to an extent, and until that is bought into some sort of governance or some sort of control, whatever you want to call it, there's and with the amount of people that are still coming into Australia, will continue to come into Australia over the next couple of years, if not more. Well, it's only feeding that frenzy, feeding that fire, right?
Absolutely right. Well, I'm waiting for the photographs from your two-bedroom property. It's going to be converted into 10-bedroom budget letting, Edwin. I think that will be worth seeing.
That's for all the viewers. You got to watch next week. This is it. We could end up doing a whole show just on that. I'll sneak in. So this is just to preempt it, a two bedroom house in Sydney that has been converted into a 10 bedroom budget accommodation. That Dusty and I are going to inspect this Thursday, watch this space. Stay tuned, it'll be an interesting one for sure. But look, that's what they do.
You better go in disguise, Edwin. Otherwise, they might see you coming.
Oh no, they know me, but they don't follow us.
Okay, very good. Now, also, there's a couple of other quick articles. We're running out of time, but interesting couple of auctions that drew your attention.
Yeah, well, this is the segment making news, right? Because we do make the news. I still believe that this. I haven't seen any articles come up with regards to that property that 54 Bowman Street at Des Moines. Tom Naylor. Tells me on Twitter that he got sold between 2.7 and 3 million. If that's the case, well, then the previous owner just dropped $1.1 million. If they did get $3 million, they just dropped $1.1 million on a building and pest report allegedly provided by the agent on the belief that, everything's fine, right? So this is what we've been warning about for how long, not to rely on those agent reports. And look, there really needs to be an inquiry about that, and the government needs to really step in, because they're really taking the piss out of buyers, and it's costing people a lot of money. The next, the ABC story is really the lucky one, where a second inspection reveals the $700,000 house that Erica wanted to buy was better suited for demolition. Again, she was provided a building pest report by the agent, and the article says when she first expressed interest in the house, a real estate agent informed her it had already passed a pre-purchase building inspection. But Mrs. Vlasic said the real estate agent presented to her a report that had already been paid by the vendor, which is what the building reports that 99% of the agents provide to potential buyers here in Sydney, which I think is a travesty. I think it's unlawful, and a lot of these need to be taken to task, and the current government need to really look into it deeper. But she's the lucky one, Martin. She's the lucky one, and we're going to hear more stories about it. So, yeah, watch this space.
Absolutely. Well, we keep saying, don't rely on the vendor's surveyor report or building inspection and get your own. Do your due diligence. Make sure that you know what you're buying, because if you buy the wrong thing, it's going to cost you a big time later. And, good example there of what goes on. Now, if we go and look at the numbers briefly, Edwin, I mean, really hardly a change, right? So if we look at Sydney, 14,657 last Monday, 14,892 this Monday, so a very slight uptick. And Melbourne, 22,025 this week compared with 21,987. So in each case, a very small uptick, but inconsequential, really.
Yeah, no, and this is why I say, like, we look at Sydney's numbers and obviously suburbs within Sydney and areas within Sydney for our when we're looking for our clients and as we're looking for our clients. But again, I'm still of the opinion that the CoreLogic numbers and all the enthusiasm around those reports aren't there. Won't be shown. We won't see them this year. I mean, Tom is calling in his words, to paraphrase him, he was calling the July, August, spring season for listing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I suspect that the true story is much closer to what we're watching, and we'll continue to watch the numbers. And in terms of the auctions, we see that the auction statistics are moving around a bit, but don't really actually have much to say either. So, same old, isn't it?
Yeah, look, same old, same old. It's all pretty much the same. With regards to the rentals, again, it's the same. And Martin, quickly before we go, the tip of the week is I didn't send it to you, but it was, look, we learn something new. We learn something new every day. We try to learn something new every day. Last week, we have discussed in previous shows how a lot of older properties, the circuit boards are overloaded, because they've got the old ceramic fuses, and they're running. We shared on one of the properties how they even tagged on a new circuit to the garage, and were using machinery in the garage, and it's a wonder that house didn't catch a light in previous years. But this is what's happening: old wiring, homes that have been built in the 30s, 40s, and the circuit boards are just adding more wiring, air conditioning units, three-phase ducted air conditioning, and all this and all that, and these circuit boards are just overloaded. But we're helping one of our clients with a project in an apartment block, and I learned this week from my Sparky mates that in a lot of these apartment blocks that were built in the 60s and the 70s, that they only get 30 amps per allocated per apartment. There's something like 120 or 130 to this particular apartment block of 10, and 30 are allocated to our client's apartment, but obviously that's distributed. And now, when you start, and so to put it into perspective, when these apartments buildings were two story walk ups were built in the 60s and in the 70s, the circuit boards were really meant to just cope with a power point in each room, lounge room, two bedrooms, kitchen, and in the bathroom, and perhaps they had an internal laundry. And perhaps a fan here and there, Martin. But now you've got these induction cooktops. They pull 32 amps. So if you want to use an induction cooktop in this apartment, you can't operate anything else. You can't even put a toaster on or boil. Put the kettle to boil some water for a cup of tea whilst you're cooking, because you're already pulling 32. That's if you're sitting close to the switchboard. So there's a lot of the circuit boards, and the main circuit boards are obviously overloaded. They're all wiring, and to upgrade the main switchboard, it could cost the owners' corporation. There are 10 units in the block. It could cost them between $80,000 and $100,000, and that's just to upgrade the main switchboard. Then obviously, then they have to upgrade the wiring and the circuits to each unit. So call it $6,000. So they could be spending that could be spending anywhere between 15 and 20,000 to upgrade the electrical system to run this induction cooktops that the government is pushing for cheaper, to use less energy. So and people are doing this, obviously putting downlights, dropping the ceilings, and putting downlights in, throughout the units. But when you start talking about split system air conditioning units and adding this and adding that, they require an upgrade. So my tip is, when you're looking into these older apartments, have a good look at the switchboard and see, see if the fuse boxes in the actual apartment itself has been upgraded. I mean, we have been doing that, on the fly, in the main areas, but in the internal parts of the apartments, we have been looking at the we always look for the switchboard inside the independent switchboard for that unit to see if it's being upgraded or not, to give an estimated future cost to our clients. So that is an interesting thing. And as I said, you learn something new every day, and that's something that I learned this week.
Very interesting, Edwin. And I always say to people when they are thinking of purchasing a property, as well as getting a building and structural survey, getting a report on the condition of the electrics is critical as well, particularly if it's an older property. And by the way, even some of the more modern ones, because they put the wrong type of cable in, with effectively deteriorating insulation that deteriorates very quickly. It is worth making quite sure that you understand what you're buying with regard to the electricals, because actually replacing the electrical system or upgrading it, and as you say, there's a significant demand now for upgraded electrics because of all the stuff we do, as well as the induction hobs and those sorts of things. Another critical area, and once again, I've seen a number of people got caught out simply because they didn't do their homework and then had this huge bill that they weren't expecting. And by the way, while we're at it, I'll also add that thinking about the drainage as well and the water is also important. So you gotta check the basics. I mean, it's so important, and we just keep saying it, but it really is important. You've got to do your due diligence on the way in, because you can really get caught if you don't.
Yeah, look, it is. And a lot of people, I think, well, that look, that's yeah, to upgrade the circuitry might be only 6,000 to 10,000 internally, but that's if the electrician can get the cable through the walls and through the existing conduit. If they can't, they've got to chase the walls. Chasing the walls means doing what you did, to poke that hole through your wall, Martin, because a lot of these older units, the partition walls, in between the rooms and that, that's brickwork and rendered. They're not they're not timber overlaid with gyprock, the flimsy stuff that they build them like now. They're actually bricks with that have been rendered. So you've got to chase it. In other words, you've got to cut into that and make a big mess, and that alone could upwards of $10,000 to do all the chasing before you start doing the cabling, not to mention all the dust and everything else and all the mess that you're gonna make. Then you got to get it re-rendered, so the costs keep on adding on to that. But yeah, look, it's something that, again, if the government's pushing for for what would you call it, for more efficient appliances and energy usage, well then, I also call on the government to provide a subsidy, because a lot of these older units have to be upgraded.
Spot on. Very important topic. And once again, I think we've covered some very, very important thematics today. Edwin, I appreciate your time. We'll do it all again next week, won't we?
Look, definitely. That's if I don't get thrown away, put away somewhere after inspecting that two-bedroom dwelling.
Well, keep safe, and I'll look forward to next week. Thanks, everyone. See you later.